I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. With the temperature soaring this week, spring has burst onto the scene, and that means lots of pollen. If you're like me, the beauty of those flowers is... Excuse me. The beauty of those flowers is tempered by the sneezes that go with them. This hour, we'll talk with a local allergist about what you can do when you get that itch in your eyes and your sinuses feel like they're going to burst. Later in the hour, our latest installment of 90 Mile View will get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're an allergy sufferer, you know it's that time of year again, with lots of sneezing, wheezing, and suffering. Pollen counts are high, so is the misery index, and today we'll get an update on what you can do to deal with it all. I've already been through a tough few weeks myself, and I'm back on the jogging trail again, but I'm loaded up on all kinds of pills, sprays, and inhalers, and I'm barely getting through one more spring. So I've got all kinds of questions about allergies. With us this morning is Dr. Scott Frankel. He's with Kansas City Allergy and Asthma, with offices in Overland Park, Olathe, and Lee Summit. As a child, he was an allergy sufferer himself, so he knows his business firsthand. Scott, so good to have you back.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me.
If you are an allergy sufferer and have a question, by all means, don't suffer alone. Give us a phone call here, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Well, every year, doctor, people tend to say it's the worst allergy season ever. How does this one rank?
I would say this spring is unusual in that we had a delayed spring, and
yes.
So everything came out at once. So we had a few weeks where we really got hit hard.
Which was when, roughly?
It really hit us very hard in late April. There was one blip in early April and then a really strong one late April.
Well, it's the blip in early April that took me underwater for a while. Yeah.
I think when we look back on this, and we won't know till the summer, but last spring, spring of 2012, was probably the worst one we've had on record. We had not only our own pollen, but just tremendous amounts of pollen blowing up from out, down south, and it just sort of went on and on, and we were sort of the reactions were started by the pollen from the south, and then when ours came out, it's called the priming effect. We were already in bad shape when we got hit with our own. And, but this year, when you're ill, it's just as bad as it can be. And so we've had several days where patients are absolutely miserable. They can't go outside. They can't work. They can't function. Run down. Can't concentrate.
Yeah,
irritable.
Right.
And that's on top of just the stuffy, runny sneezing.
It is kind of a weird cycle because, at least in my case, I sort of get nailed for a week. And in this year, it was like early April. And then it takes me two or three, 4 weeks to sort of get back up again. And then I'm sort of okay. But there is like a month or 5 weeks where I'm just really struggling. And I gather that's not too unusual, is it?
That's a mark of someone who's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. So your allergies would be classed as worse than many. About 20% of the population has allergies. And you might have a few days of stuffy, runny sneezing. It's even hard to distinguish whether it's a head cold or an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
But for the more severe sufferers, after the initial insult has even come and gone, the symptoms linger. There's been so much inflammation caused by histamine and all of the other chemicals released in the allergy attack that it takes a long time to bounce back. And it takes, once the reaction has started, it takes less and less pollen to keep it going. So after the original blast of pollen and it starts to go down, you're seeing less amounts that ordinarily wouldn't have bothered you and now are continuing to make you feel.
And terrible. That's because why exactly?
Well, we call it the priming effect, where the allergy system gets ramped up And so
your sensitivities are high then.
Yes. Yeah. The allergy antibody increases in our body as soon as we start to see what we're allergic to. And then just as part, it's part of the immune system, and the way the immune system is built is that once it sees what it thinks is an offending agent, in this case, it's a mistake. It's pollen is not an offending agent, but we think maybe the body thinks it's an infection. But once the immune system sees an offending agent, it's built to attack it more aggressively each time it sees it, even though it might be lesser amounts.
And when you say attack it, you mean sneezing, trying to get rid of it, that kind of thing?
Well, the sneeze is a function of the body to expel an irritating or noxious substance from the nose.
Mm-hmm.
At a more biochemical level, the allergy antibody connects to the pollen grain, which connects to a built-in protector cell in our body. And when those three conditions meet simultaneously, this cell explodes. It releases histamine, a lot of other chemicals. The histamine is very irritating, and that irritates the tissues. It's supposed to kill the supposed infection. In fact, it does kill parasites.
Mm-hmm.
It does, of course, not kill the pollen grain. So histamine is released in your case, say, massive amounts. It causes the stuffy nose, runny nose, itchy nose, sneezing, sinus headaches. If it goes into your lungs, then you're prone to asthma, wheezing, coughing, chest tightness, shortness of breath. And then when the histamine goes into your brain, and that makes you run down and trouble concentrating and irritable.
Well, and as you're explaining all this, our producer, Steven Steigman, is through the window here sneezing his loving brains out back there, it looks like. Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here today. We're talking about allergies and how you can deal with them. We have a great expert in the house, Dr. Scott Frankel. Our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org. Let's go to Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, and this does seem to be the season of seasons. I'm a lifelong sufferer from the Gesundheit syndrome, but this year, the eye irritation, there have been more than a few occasions where I start out gently rubbing at a corner of an eye, and then it's full fist, and then it's into the elbows, just, you know, trying to alleviate the itching. And I wonder if the doctor knows if there's any symptomatic relief, you know, over-the-counter eye drop type stuff. The tetrahydrazoline stuff doesn't do anything as far as, you know, alleviating the symptoms. And it's a bit much this year.
Yes, I do have some suggestions, Jake. For some reason, eyes are always worse in the spring. I don't have a good explanation for that, but we do know why eye symptoms are so bad. It turns out that our built-in allergy cell that I was referring to earlier, it's highly concentrated in the tissues of the eye, as well as any other tissues that come into contact with our external environment. So the respiratory tract, the GI tract, and our skin, especially our palms and soles. If you want to say that we used to walk on all fours, that was to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
But in the eye, the best thing that always works is direct treatment. So eye drops are better than pills. There is an eye drop over the counter now. Its brand name is Zaditor, Zaditor. There are some off brands of the same chemical. They're just as good. A lot of patients like to refrigerate these drops because they feel so much better when they go in.
Oh, that's interesting.
Cool.
And that's
cool.
Not much different than our prescription drops. We have two prescription drops that are once a day. This one's twice a day. And then if you're still clawing your eyes out, there are steroid eye drops, which are tricky to use. That has to come from a regular physician. And actually, in my case, I always prefer the ophthalmologist or optometrist to use it because they have the ability to check for the potential side effects. Those are a little tricky to use. But for most patients, we can get by with a drug like Zaditor.
Okay. What is the active ingredient? I mean, how does it function, the Zaditor?
The active ingredient serves to stabilize this allergy cell. I keep referring to the cell. It's called the MAST, M-A-S-T cell. So it stabilizes the membrane so that you're not releasing the chemical anymore, the histamine.
Okay.
And we like this one better than, say, Visine AC. A lot of those other chemicals have a decongestant in them, which gets the red out, but you can become addicted to that get the red out. in your eye, just as you can with Afrin in your nose. It's the same type of chemical. So Zaditor works to get rid of the inflammation because you're not releasing as much of the allergy chemical. And then slowly, as the inflammation leaves, the red goes away. It's not as quick to get the red out, but it's far safer.
Okay, and one, I'm a man of a certain age, and I've already forgotten the name of the product of which you spoke. So will you speak it one more time, and I'll leave you alone.
Zaditor.
All right. Well, thank you, doctor, and this shall pass. This soon, too, shall pass.
Good luck, Jake. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
Yeah. You talk about, you've used the word histamine a few times, the release of histamine. What is that exactly?
Histamine is a chemical in the body that's supposed to be there, and it's the major player in an allergic reaction. In the test tube, histamine actually kills parasites, and this is where the theory comes. You know, why do we have this part of the allergy system that we don't really need? And the theory is that it was probably put there to help fight parasites. We've got white blood cells that kill bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't necessarily kill a parasite. So it's an inflammatory chemical to fight off some type of offending agent. And we have all sorts of these chemicals in our body.
It causes your nose to run?
Yes. It causes
antihistamine does just the opposite.
That's exactly
obviously.
Right. Yeah. What the antihistamine does is it's chemically similar but not identical to histamine, and it sits in the histamine receptor. So for histamine, it's released, and then it has to find a cell that has a receptor for it. It's like a lock and a key.
Mm-hmm.
Histamine is the key. It looks for the lock on the cell. As soon as it's attached, the cell gets leaky and swollen, and you feel miserable. So an antihistamine is sort of like another key that gets into that lock first so that the histamine can't get into the lock.
Right.
But the antihistamine doesn't open the lock. It just sits in there. It can't turn all the way. So it's a similar chemical, and the original ones were so similar, that's why they caused you to be sleepy. They looked a little too much like histamine. The newer ones like Zyrtec and Claritin and Allegra are structurally enough different that they don't cause the side effects.
Why doesn't the body over years, I've been dealing with this for 40 years, why doesn't the body improve over time and deal with allergies better?
We don't know that one. We do see that with time, many people do lose their allergies or they're substantially less. We usually say in the 50s or the 60s for both sexes, although you and I have already discussed that that's not helping us any. My father was 89. He still had his. It's like some families just have a stronger genetic predisposition to have allergies. But nevertheless, a lot of both sexes in their 50s and 60s will lose sensitivity. And then females sometimes will be better after menopause, at least a few years after menopause, if they don't take hormone supplements.
Yeah. I can remember being an altar boy, you know, when I was in high school at my church and trying during allergy season and bowing and all this stuff. It was very awkward, awkward situation to be in during those years. I'll never forget it. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Justin from Kansas City, Missouri. Justin, you're on with Dr. Scott Frankel. Good morning.
Good afternoon, Doc. I went to your clinic about 20 years ago, and I had the back test where you do the little pinpricks of
Yeah.
And about 298 out of the 300 tested positive. And looked into the place and said, it looks like someone beat me. They were so puffed up. I went to Rado for about 10 years, and I came back to Kansas City. And it's as though I grew out of my allergies because I don't have all the problems that I had growing up. And I was just wondering, how is that possible? I just heard your answer regarding genetic disposition. But
yeah.
Do people just grow out of them?
Yeah. How old are you now, Justin?
44.
44. Okay. It doesn't matter how strongly allergic you are to begin with in terms of a predictor of whether you'll outgrow it or not. We don't know why. I can say we see families where nobody outgrows it, and we see families where everybody outgrows it. But in your case, and by the way, that was probably the prick tests on your back were probably like 43 as opposed to, I know it seemed like 300, and you were probably miserable at the time.
Yeah.
But you were highly allergic. Then you got away from your trigger, wherever you moved. And so how long have you been back here?
10 years.
10 years. Okay. By rights, if you were going to reacquire your allergies, you should have done it. Usually you will do it within 2 to 3 years of moving back to the offensive climate. So I think you're very fortunate. I cannot tell you why this happened, but odds are that you will not do this again unless something else happens, like you bring a new animal into the home that you're allergic to, or if you have chemotherapy.
Does diet have any effect? Because I went from being a carnivore to a vegetarian. Would that affect it?
We don't know yet. I could never say no. There's always been claims, most of which are unsubstantiated. I have not seen anything that relates those two together.
Yeah.
But it's these sort of questions are actively being worked on right now.
Well, thank you very much.
Justin, thank you for the call. Yeah, I'm wondering, you say there's a lot of things we don't know yet about allergies. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being we know everything we need to know about allergies that we'll ever know, where are we?
I'd give it about a 3.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
The allergy antibody was postulated to exist as far back as the 50s, I believe. But it wasn't finally discovered. It was either 69 or 67 that some Japanese scientists, because our technology wasn't good enough to measure these very small amounts of this antibody in the bloodstream. And they finally found it. So, you know, not till about 40 years ago. And then they had to break down how this whole system works. So I've talked about releasing histamine, but a lot of other chemicals are released, and histamine isn't the only troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
So that has led to the newer research of what other chemicals can we use to block these other offending inflammatory agents that are being released. Most of those are in research right now. And every week, a new possibility comes up because they find a new pathway that this is all going down and causing trouble. So in the meantime, what we have to do is just sort of work on what we call the target organ. We give medicines that work in the nose in sort of a general way, or a pill that works on the whole body, or a drop for the eye. But these aren't—they're working at the local level and stabilizing the mast cell. We don't have a good way yet of just not having this reaction start at all. We have the allergy shots.
I was going to say, where do they come in terms of helping the body get past all this?
This is an interesting thing about the shots. They've been around since the 30s, even before we discovered the IgE antibody. That's the allergy antibody. But they work by gradually building up an injection of what you're allergic to so that the body becomes tolerant and says, boy, you know, if I was flooded with so much ragweed pollen in my bloodstream and that was really an infection, I'd be sick, really sick,
yeah.
And I'm not. So the body says, okay, well, maybe this isn't so bad after all, and the immune response is lessened. It's never, unfortunately, or almost never turned off, not yet. The only way we have of turning off the allergy system, unfortunately, turns off the rest of the immune system. The allergy system is an overactive system we wish we didn't have, that at least in the United States we don't need. We may need it in third world countries still because of parasites.
So then to what extent do shots actually help then, Scott, sort of get past this? How effective can they be?
Well, the advantage to shots are they're the only thing that make you less allergic forever. And when I say forever, we're talking about 80% of the time. 20% of people are substantially better but cannot get off the shots. And so I took mine for 17 years, although they're much better now than they were back then. But they work about 85-90% of the time. And even after you stop the shots, which is somewhere between a 3- and 5-year course for 80% of people, you stay better indefinitely. Whereas the medicines, as good as they are, whether it's a pill or a spray, you'll have to take those indefinitely. You're sort of treading water. And you take those indefinitely until you've outgrown your allergies, which may be far, far in the future.
Or never. In some cases, the way I'm headed, or maybe your situation too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And what about DNA research helping us advance our understandings here? What do you see happening there?
Boy, they thought they had one about maybe 7 to 10 years ago out of Johns Hopkins. They thought they had the answer with sort of a DNA molecule to turn off the allergy system by itself. And it got up to what we call phase three trials. These are right before it's supposed to come out.
Yes.
And it went bust.
Oh.
It just didn't work.
Really? Would have changed my world.
Yes, it really would have. It would have turned off the system completely, so there's no symptoms. And it's just not there.
Have any advances? Don't walk away from this topic
yet. Yes.
Give me some hope here. Any advances made since then to maybe get that back?
Or? That particular molecule, no. Not that I'm aware of. We never hear about it anymore. If you follow some of the more scientific newspaper articles, sometimes they talk about interleukins. These are chemicals in the body that are inflammatory, and they're sort of messengers that cause other things to happen in the body, almost like a relay switch. And there's at least two interleukins that propagate the allergy reaction, and they are working on anti-interleukin chemicals to block that. So that holds promise. There's another chemical that's already out. I can't even pronounce its generic name, but its trade name is Xolair, X-O-L-A-I-R. And this is an antibody that sucks up all allergy antibodies in the bloodstream. Doesn't matter whether it's to a pollen or to a food or to latex, it just sucks it up so that they're no longer active. They can no longer attach to the mast cell because that's how this whole system has to work. The allergy antibody has to attach to the mast cell. The antibody also has to be attached to, say, a pollen. Well, in this case, the allergy antibody is attached to some other chemical and can't do anything. It just floats in the bloodstream. This chemical has been fairly good but not perfect for, say, moderately severe asthmatics, and that's the only condition where it's approved right now. Why it doesn't work better than it does more consistently, we don't know. On paper, it should, but yet it doesn't. So clearly, there's something about the immune system we don't understand. But for those patients who take it for their moderately severe asthma, very often they state that their hay fever is gone, just gone. There's not enough of the allergy antibody to trigger the hay fever symptoms, but you have to stay on this chemical indefinitely so far. We don't know how to get off it. And unfortunately, it's very expensive. It's at least $1,000 a month. And most insurance companies will not approve it for anything other than moderately severe asthma. So if you just have hay fever and you go to the doctor, you're not going to get it.
Out of luck, yeah. Talking about allergies, our guest, Dr. Scott Frankel. He's with Kansas City Allergy and Asthma offices in Olathe, Overland Park, and Lee Summit. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Let's go back to some phone calls here and go to Bill from Miriam. Bill, good morning.
Yes, how are you doing?
Well, thanks.
Good. I've got a kind of a strange question. I seem to have grown out of my springtime, falltime hay fever. In fact, I used to be able to, I still can, by getting out in the weather, getting out of the air conditioning, it even helps. That seems strange to me. But my question is, in the wintertime, I just go nuts. If I go out in, say, like low 30-degree weather or 20-degree weather, it gets real bad. Even bloody. Are there wintertime things out there?
That's it. I thought people were safe in wintertime.
Yeah. Bill, Mate, can I ask how old you are?
I'm in my late 60s.
Okay, I had to think about that, huh?
But I've always had that thing in the wintertime. Even as a kid, my mother would tell me, don't stand in the doorway,
Okay.
And sure enough, it would get to me.
Okay. Well, cold air is usually an irritant for the nose. It doesn't like cold or dry air. Very frequently, what will happen is the nose will try to keep itself moist and secrete mucus, and that gives you a runny nose or drainage on the back of your throat. But I really think what's probably happening with you is you've grown out of your allergies and into another condition, which we call vasomotor rhinitis. You're going to love this, Bill.
I've heard that.
Okay, the other name for this is the nose of old age. And by old age, I'm sorry to say that, but by old age, we mean age 40 and up. So at age 40, the nose is old. And it's originally It's put there to warm and humidify air and to trap offending agents. And then the blood vessels and the nerves of the nose are all controlled by the autonomic nervous system. This is going back to like high school biology. The nose is either going to be open or closed, dry or wet, and these nerves innervate the nose and make it do what it's supposed to do. But sometime after age 40, it sort of gets out of whack, and it either gets way too stuffy or alternates with way too runny, so much so that you might bend over and it just pours out of your nose. And the hallmark of this condition is that it's made worse by nonspecific irritants. Hmm. Sudden changes in temperature, humidity, barometric pressure, strong odors, doesn't matter whether it's perfume or ammonia, aerosol sprays, red alert days, dusting the house throws up pollution, mowing the lawn throws up pollution. So a lot of those things will happen in the spring and fall. You think, that's allergy, when it's really this other condition. And what this really is, it's an exaggerated form of when you eat spicy foods and your nose runs.
Yes.
This is the same thing, but it happens for you with cold weather. And when you see the little old ladies walking around with Kleenex in their hand at the nose, that's it. That's the condition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there are special sprays for this. They're not perfect, but they work pretty well, and they're prescription sprays that your regular doctor could prescribe for you.
Okay. Are any of the drugs that you're discussing, has anybody thought of specifically putting them, like, in the sinus, in the nose, you know, like you do other drugs to, like, maybe stop pain in a certain spot? Instead of taking a pill, you'd inject the drug in that spot.
When you have really severe allergies, in the old days, we used to inject steroids in the nose tissues.
Oh,
We usually only get to do that once, and then we never saw the patient again because they were less than thrilled. But nowadays, for allergy sufferers, we use a steroid nose spray, and if we're really desperate, you could either use a shot in the rear end or a pill. But unfortunately, for vasomotor rhinitis, those sprays don't work. So we have to use a different kind of spray, which goes directly to where you want it in the nose, but you have to use it frequently.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Bill, thank you, and good luck to you, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Dr. Scott Frankel about allergies and what to do about them. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion about teens and introverts with psychologist Wes Crenshaw, you can find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Is talent a myth? Tomorrow on the program, a look at the world of fantasy art, and Brian McTavish returns with our weekend to-do list. This hour, we're talking about allergies with Dr. Scott Frankel. He's with Kansas City Allergy and Asthma. Lots of phone calls here. Our board is full. Option number two is to send us an email to updatedate@kcur.org or tweet us at @kcurupdate. Let's get back to some more calls here, folks. Lots of questions. Linister from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I didn't know I had an allergy, and my throat swelled up, and I got to the hospital, and the doctor said, another half an hour, you've been choked to death.
Mm.
And he sent me home, and about a month later, it happened again. I got to the hospital. I cut a hole in my throat so I could breathe. I'm allergic. It's in wine, sulfites. It's sulfur dioxide.
Mm.
And it's almost killed me twice. I've been hospitalized three times, and no one knew it was an allergy when I went to the emergency room. They didn't know what I had. It's very strange. So you got to see a doctor right away.
Especially, yeah.
But I seen an allergist right away. I would have known it. Would have saved my life probably. It's very serious. So I can never drink wine the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's correct. You cannot. What you've had is called angioedema of the throat. Angioedema is like a hive in the skin, except this is deeper in the tissues. And then it sounds like you ended up with a tracheotomy to open your throat.
Man.
We're not 100% sure in wines what causes what. For instance, there's histamine in wine. There are tannins. There's metabisulfite. In Italy, this is going way back, they had several deaths years ago, and they finally found out it was the metabisulfite. So Italian reds have maybe the whites too, but they're actually regulated by the government. You can only have certain levels of metabisulfite. So we have many patients who can't have red wine because they tighten up in their chest, but they can have Italian reds, and they can have whites. In your case, you get no wine. You just don't get any. There are no great tests that you would want to do to prove this. If it was a lesser reaction, we could do an oral challenge with some pure metabisulfite versus a blank, and you wouldn't know what you're getting, but it's not worth your while. If you can eat, say, a restaurant salad at a buffet salad, which may or may not have metabisulfite on it. It's not supposed to, but it might. If you can eat that, I would just do that. I would stay away from the wines. Did they give you an EpiPen to carry?
And she recommended that, but I didn't get one. I just don't drink any wine at all.
Well,
I can't risk it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But on the outside chance that it's something else that we don't know about, maybe something else you ate with the wine, or an ingredient in wine that's common to other foods, carrying the EpiPen would be life-saving.
I think you're right. I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Lester, thank you for the call. Shannon writes us on our Facebook page suggesting allergy sufferers using neti pots. Explain, Scott, what a neti pot is. I sort of use a spray bottle, but is one better than the other?
I think one is better than the other, but the theory is apparently sound. A neti pot takes a salt water solution,
yes,
and it's made to a concentration that sort of looks like blood to the body, so it's very soothing. The neti pot works by gravity, where you just sort of hold this pot upside down and the water flows out into the nose. It cleanses the nose short term. So you're washing the pollen out of the nose. You're washing the mucus out of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a lot of postnasal drainage, it washes that away. And then it moistens the nose. So a happy nose is more open and a happy nose secretes less mucus. We sort of like the irrigations better, the squeeze bottle that you mentioned, Steve.
Hmm.
You get more volume and more pressure behind the squeeze. It doesn't work by gravity. So you're bending over the sink at about a 90-degree angle, and you squeeze some of this water up your nose, salt water.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it correctly, some of the water goes up one nostril, turns around, comes
yes.
out the other side.
Yes.
The rest comes out your mouth. If you're too far upright, it goes down your throat and you gag. If you squeeze too hard, it hurts. So you know right away what's going on. But it really does work. It's a temporary fix, but it does work. And I tell you, it's great. If you have a head cold and your nose is sort of snotty and plugged, you're immediately better. You feel better. I can't say that you actually get
better,
over the
better.
Head cold,
yeah.
but you feel better immediately.
You know, they say you should use distilled water when you do that. Really? I've never done it.
Now the official recommendations are a little bit sterner because there was a few case reports of people getting amoeba in their brain from using tap water, which is sort of what I always have done is lukewarm tap water, you know, sort of the temperature
yeah.
that you put on your wrist for a baby's bottle.
Yeah.
But they're worried about at least this may be a liability issue, but the rare chance that you might get this amoeba from your tap water. So distilled water or boiled water. That
yeah.
then cools down.
Okay. Yeah. Then
yeah,
make sure it cools down first. Okay. We're talking allergies here with Dr. Scott Frankel, and your phone call is welcome. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Gwen here from Dallas. Gwen, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is a severe allergy sufferer, not responsive to over-the-counter or prescription medications, and his family doctor is recommending allergy testing and shots that he gives himself at home. It's called home immunotherapy, and I just wonder what Dr. Frankel thinks about that. I'll hang up and listen to your call on the air.
Yeah, great, Gwen. Thank you.
There are lots of physicians who practice allergy, and it's perfectly legal. All of the data show that the board-certified allergists treat this better more efficiently, and less costly. As it turns out, the studies show that allergists tend to use less allergy shots than non-allergists, like ENT physicians or family practice. And one reason the allergy shots from a board-certified allergist are more effective is because they're so much stronger. Steve and I were talking off air how when you get allergy shots nowadays, you cannot give them at home if it's a real allergy shot because they're too strong. And the risk of a severe reaction like a hay fever attack or an asthma attack or your throat closing up or your blood pressure dropping, while very, very small, the risk is real. So our guidelines for the board-certified allergists are you can only take the shots in a doctor's office under medical observation and then wait 20 or 30 minutes there to make sure the reaction doesn't occur. If it does, we've got the antidote, the EpiPen that we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. to stop the reaction. So if you're taking them at home, you know that these things are weak. There's just no two ways about it.
That's interesting.
Nobody's going to let you take something strong at home. It wouldn't make any sense at all. So these shots are going to be weak. They're going to be less effective. And again, the studies show that the weak shots you take forever. You might be on them for 20 years, whereas a standard allergy shot, maybe 3 to 5 years. I would strongly, strongly urge you don't do that. Go find a board-certified allergist, not just somebody who says they do allergy because anybody can say that. You can actually check who – you can ask the office. Sometimes you'll get a wrong answer about that. But you can go online and check the American Board of Medical Specialties. It's a national service. It's free. You can look up any doctor for anything. You can look up your family practice doctor to see if they're board certified in family practice. So you can look up somebody and see if they're board certified in internal medicine or allergy or surgery, whatever.
You know, Scott, when you do when someone is thinking about getting shots and you do the back test, I guess is still the way you do it. The back test shows you the different kinds of elements that someone is allergic to, correct? Can you tell from that test just how severely allergic they are to the various things? And can you determine if someone truly needs shots and how much they're suffering from that test?
No, not just from the test. It's a multitude of things. Most of it comes from the history.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you say, look, I'm just bothered in one season of the year, that's not worth it to take shots year-round unless you're absolutely miserable in that season and there's no medicine that'll stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have, say, seasonal asthma, because the shots can take care of that as well, and that's a little more serious. But if you have significant symptoms in more than one season of the year that require regular medications for control, you show no signs of outgrowing it, and you have enough positive skin tests that would match up with the time when you're sick. So you're sick, say, in the spring, and we can find either tree or grass allergy or maybe mold, then it's worth considering the injections as a way of getting off much of your medication and having long-term improvement.
And how long does it take? How many shots do you have to get before you begin to see signs of improvement?
Well, if we build them up, and remember, we have to start at a very low dose so you don't get sick. If we build them up, say, weekly, they can take about 4 months to get to the top dose and then maybe another 2 months till they really kick in. So 4 to 6 months till you're feeling some benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's quicker. And then if you get the shots more frequently at first, say twice a week, 3 times a week sometimes. We have a few patients who do what we call rush therapy where we build up to the top dose in a day and a half.
Whoa.
Yes.
Really?
We take much bigger jumps between the shots in terms of dose. So we're running the possibility that we'll have a reaction, but that's sort of what we're looking for because once you're in a reaction, we can ramp up the dose really high and very quickly. So if we do it the normal way, 4 to 6 months, less than that if you want to get them more often temporarily.
Yeah, okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Mike from Roland Park. Mike, good morning.
Yeah, thanks. Great show.
Thanks.
I had a couple questions. Number one is with the desensitization with shots, does it work better in nasal symptoms versus lung symptoms? And number two is if, let's say that a person has asthma and they're found to be allergic to 2 or 3 different things, does it make sense to treat them for all 3 of these allergens at the same time? Those are my 2 questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good question. The The shots for the nose work about 85 to 90% of the time. Allergy shots for the lungs are 75, maybe. So it's a little bit less, and that's because there's more usually than just an allergy trigger for asthma. Exercise, virus, stress, cold air all can also trigger asthma, and those are not obviously related to allergy. Still, it's a good enough success rate that it's worthwhile trying. And especially if you have asthma, you more than likely have nose symptoms as well. So we're going to get everything. And that another advantage of the shots are that it's one treatment that treats everything as opposed to a separate head medicines and separate chest medicines. Your second question, Mike, about should you treat for all the allergens? Yes, because allergy is an additive condition. If you don't cover them all, the ones that you don't cover may still cause trouble eventually. And we just want to, if you're going to go through the hassle and the expense of these injections, we want to hit it all right the first time.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be more expensive to do three at once then?
No, it's not more expensive.
Okay.
It shouldn't be. The expense comes really from the number of injections that you're going to need. And we can put multiple allergens in a single syringe, but certain allergens don't agree with each other in the same syringe. They beat each other up. So the only way it would be more expensive for you is if it caused you to take a second or a third injection each time.
And I suppose it would be a little hard to tell which one it was working on, though, if you do three at once.
Well, probably it's working on all of them, and probably they're all at fault. So you have to treat the pollens, which is tree, grass, and weed, if you're allergic to those. Molds, if you're allergic to that, dust mite, cat and dog, with dog being our least effective shot. Not terrible, but not as good as the other ones.
Mike, right, thanks. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah. Linda emails us at updatedatkcur.org. How do you know when to seek the help of an allergist as opposed to continuing treatment with your general practitioner and, you know, over-the-counter medicines?
Okay. Well, let's suppose at least that you're completely controlled with medicines and the medicines are not having any side effects. So you're not having a bloody nose from the nose sprays, or your antihistamines are not making you sleepy or cranky.
Mm-hmm.
If you're happy taking medicines for whatever length of time you have to, then that's okay. We think the medicines are safe and they can be used long term. If you're sort of an anti-medicine person, you say, boy, these doctors tell me this medicine's safe today, and tomorrow they go, oops, we just found out something, and that does happen. Or you're one of the more naturalists, which is what shots are, because we only inject you with what you breathe in every day anyway. So if you're uncomfortable taking medicines frequently, if the medicines are not working completely, those are the reasons to go to the allergist. And just because you go to the allergist does not mean you're going to get shots. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how many people come to us and they don't even have allergies. They've got one of these other non-allergic conditions, like the vasomotor rhinitis that we mentioned earlier. There's another condition, which is called non-allergic rhinitis. Looks just like allergies, but you don't get shots for those. You have to take meds.
All right, back to one more phone call here. Nancy from Lawrence. Nancy, good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Hi, I am. I'm really interested, and I've become more interested recently in the supposed connection between your gut and allergy symptoms. I took a graduate level immunology class when I was in grad school, and the professor made an offhand comment once that the way to create energy is to consume something and process it through your digestive system, and that leads me to wonder whether there is something to the whole local bee pollen sort of idea.
Huh.
I have terrible, terrible, terrible ragweed allergies. I'm miserable from about late July through October, and I'm wondering, could I do something about it with bee pollen?
Nancy, I'll have to make this really quick. Bee pollen is not the answer. It does contain ragweed. You're looking for a way to orally desensitize yourself. Unfortunately, the amount of ragweed you'll get in the bee pollen, which is honey, is going to be different from batch to batch. It's probably going to make you sicker rather than make you better. And the whole discussion about how to desensitize people orally or under the tongue, unfortunately, takes about an hour. So I think we have to leave it there, but I would not suggest the bee pollen.
All right. Well, Dr. Scott Frankel's with Kansas City Allergy and Asthma Offices, Olathe, Overland Park, and Lee Summit. Hey, I've learned a lot today. Thanks a lot for coming in, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Steve.